And our very special guest is a young lady that had a memorable 2019 and was named recently Central Coast Sports Person of the Year, Nicola McDermott. Great to have you in the studio, Nicola. And we're going to talk about your life and sounds like a very interesting life it's been so far.
Definitely. Great to meet you.
Nicola, let's go back to the start. Are you not too far away from here? We're at the studio at Central Coast Leagues Club, Tascot, where you were born, mum and dad, and your older brother. Tell us about those formative years growing up at Tascot.
Yeah, so Tascot, I think, always gets a bad rap of being that nothing happens there. Well, I was born there, so no. But it was a great childhood, definitely. We did a lot of sports. My brother was involved in music. It wasn't until I was in high school that I got involved in music also. Mum and dad making sure that they'd give us the best opportunities to not only just be good in school, but try and find something that we're passionate about. So she tried to put me in different sports and being tall. So I was born and I think I was 61, 62 centimetres long. So right. I don't know what the average baby is, but it's not that. One of the longest babies born in Gosford, I think.
That's a record.
I'm sure we can get some records up with that.
Yes.
Just being really tall. We tried swimming, tennis, dancing. Led to nothing.
Basketball.
I did, and they'd sub me on for the jump ball, and they'd sub me off. And mum's like, "I'm not paying this much for reps, and you're on the court for 5 minutes." But dad always he admired track. I think Chariots of Fire was growing up.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
That was a movie, and he liked doing sprints. And I think he always wanted to go into the stall gift. That was just something that he wanted to do. Anyway, so all that gets projected onto me. So when I get into my first athletics carnival in year two in school, I want all the events.
Right. And in running?
As in just all of them.
Yeah.
Just, we did the throws, we did the runs, whatever it was, I just won them. And so my dad's eyes lit up and said, "Okay, we found it." So I did athletics at Gosford Little Athletics when I was in under eights, and I loved it. I loved all of the running. I did surf life saving as well that year, and so I was involved in the sand sprinting and the wade. Just all that stuff, I loved it. It was always being so tall, I actually had a reason for being tall. So.
All right. Now, what about the rest of your family? Do you come from tall parents? Is your brother tall or sisters, or is it a tall McDermott family?
So dad's around 6'4".
Okay.
Mum, not 6 foot, but mum's Croatian, and so Croatians are known to be tall.
Okay.
So I visited Croatia a few years now in a row, and my great aunties overseas are over 6 foot. So
wow.
I think height runs both sides of the family, and it just happened that when I was born, I was tall. But I've got one older brother, and he's 6'5". So
right,
yeah, the genetics are strong in the McDermott family.
Nicola, you're talking about your older brother in music, and you touched on yourself. You learnt the piano. You used to come. It could be you and Elton John sitting down at the piano.
Oh, yeah.
What level did you get to, and do you still get the chance to play the piano?
Yeah, so I never finished my grade 8, but I got up to grade 7 in piano all throughout my high school, and it was something that I just loved. I loved music, I loved the rhythm of it, and I think maybe that's what I enjoy about high jump is it's very rhythmic.
Yep.
I can't dance to save my life, but I can do certain movements in perfect synchronization, and so I think music really did help that. So I did that, and then after I went to university, obviously I stopped piano practice because you can't do everything, and I haven't picked it up. But I think maybe one day I'd love to complete that eighth grade for piano and close a chapter. But yeah, I still do in my spare time love just tinkling on the keys a bit.
What about when you were growing up and you talked about the under eights? When did you say, high jumping, this is going to be it for me, and I'm going to see how far I can go?
So under nines, we get introduced to high jump because they don't want five-year-olds trying to jump into the bag. Just make no sense. And I fell over the high jump bar, and I think I was already breaking records. And I thought, I really like this. So I enjoyed. I'm a short sprint sort of athlete, so I have a short amount of fast twitch fibers. And then the jump at the end is like the excitement. So pretty much within the first year of it, I was sold. This is what I wanted to do.
So, Nicola, as you mentioned, it started Little Athletics at Gosford. Your first coach, you know, he obviously could identify with your ability. Tell us about those times.
Yeah, so at Gosford there was Peter McWilliam, and he was a great coach. Every time you did a personal best, he gave you a bag of lollies. So okay. He had a big amount of
right.
them.
Right, at a candy shop.
Oh yeah, it doesn't sound good, but it was great. and so he was really supportive of me for the first couple of years. Unfortunately, he got motor neurons syndrome. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately he passed away, and another coach on the Central Coast, Matthew Horsnell, yeah. who had been eyeing me and going, oh no, I think she's going to have great potential, he invited me to start training with him. And that was when I was around 10-11 years old, and that was really the start of that next stage of we're in this, and the Olympics and those Australian records. He had the same vision as me for a long-term commitment. He mm-hmm. said, I don't want you to be a national champion at 11. I want you to be a national champion in your 20s. You know, we're going to be working on that.
All right. So what about the technique? How much has it changed in the last, say, 5 to 10 years from when you were doing it as a teenager to like now? What are you doing differently now that's getting you all these, you know, records and leaping to Olympic qualifying standard?
Yeah. So a lot, even within the last 12 months, huge amount of changes. So the hard thing is my coach would ask me to do something, but when you're a teenager body, you just can't do it. Mm. So when you think of the high jump and you're leaning away from the bar, I didn't have the muscles in my back to be able to lean as much. And so you don't get as much speed, and then you're not in the right position off takeoff. So over the years, I've gotten strong enough now that everything he asked me to do, I can do quite nicely. And if I can't do it, then we need to work on the off season and get strong so I can do it in the jump. So my run up has extended in length because I've actually been the same height since I was 14, but I'm a lot stronger now. Mm. And rather than running in, just dawdling in and then just doing a few fast strides, every single step and every angle of my foot is needs to be precise and needs to be consistently repeated. And the thing that gets me over the bar is the last few steps are really fast and explosive, and the knee and the hip, all the positions in the air has to be really good. So it's all the technique happens away from the actual high jump. It's doing all the gym work, all the speed work, Pilates. I'm at Coast Sport with the Tugra physio there. I've got so many people in my team working on all the little one percenters that when I do high jump now, that perfect model of high jump I'm able to replicate.
Nicola, you're at that Olympic level now, but tell us the pathway. Tell us when you first started that competition where, hey, I've got to be able to handle this if I want to keep stepping up the ranks. When did that all start?
Yeah, so I think I always, even as a teenager, had big ambitions for myself, and my coach also had big ambitions because we just saw my potential and my mindset, and we had a very clear path of what we wanted to do. So I made the World Junior Under 20 Championships when I was in year 12 in 2014. And I remember going there, and it was one of the first times I went, oh, there's girls that are really good out here. You know, it's not just a few of us in Australia. Internationally, it's really good. And I think the best time for me was probably in 2017 at the World Championships. I'd increased my PB a few centimetres, and I arrived on scene there. I got the call-up 3 days before the competition started. I was a late call-up, top 30 in the world, just scraped in there, got sent over to London. And so I was so unprepared. I came dead last. but I was there, and I looked at all the girls and realised they're actually not that different to me. Mm. But they have the right mindset. They've got the right technique. And I think that really switched on just to say, no, I don't just want to be in it just to make the Olympics. I want to be on the podium. I think I want to be the best in my sport. And that, I think that was 2017, for a lot of reasons, was the turning point and then obviously Commonwealth Games and World Championships and the rest of it have followed.
Yeah. What about, it's the 2 metre, that's the magic, that's the holy grail, isn't it, the 2 metres, and you're so close, so what are you got to do to actually get that, I think it's 0.04 or something to get there?
Yeah, I think I'm trying to challenge my mindset because there's life after 2 metres. There's the record, the world record's 209,
okay.
And the girls are jumping 204 now. Like we've seen an increase in height jump now. But for me, I think always that 2 metre jump would just. I've always said that. I'm like, oh, I know I can do it by 2020, 2 metres. For me, there's a lot of speed work. There's a lot of technical work. So we're working with a biomechanist now, looking at every stride length. And I think it's a lot to do with outside of competition, outside of training. What we're doing for training is really good. And, you know, I can increase the weights in gym. I can decrease my time with running, increase the length of my strides and whatnot. All of that will equate immediately to equaling or bettering that 196. But this time of year, I'm really working on getting good sleeping patterns, eating patterns, recovery patterns. You know, I recently quit work at the cafe that I've worked at for the past 5 years because I realised standing on my feet all the time, that's not going to be good. So yeah. I'm making all the hard decisions. I think they're harder than training as such. To get to that next level, it's just your whole lifestyle needs to just be scrutinised a bit, and then you just don't worry about it. You just go, okay, this is what needs to change. So that's what I'm working on at the moment. I really think it's those little the habits that will get that 2 metres, not just to be that one-time jump, but to be a consistent, high jumper.
Mm. So, Nicola, you've got to pay for your coffee now. You don't get free coffee. Yes. You're not working there. But also, along the way, you're studying as well. You're going to Sydney University to study science, biochemistry.
Yeah.
But they've also come on board as support as well, you know, being not only supportive in understanding your diary and timetable, but also being able to, you know, help you with what you're endeavouring to do as well.
Definitely. I think they're my major sponsor, Sydney University. The athletics club, Sydney University Athletics Club, have been from day one really excited. And they're like, you know, I think you can make it. I think they're not just make it, but be one of the best of all time. So they've been really good as far as when I've been going overseas. As soon as I need to go overseas, the Elite Athlete Program, call them up and say, these are the dates I'm going to be away for. I think they appreciate that I'll take things as far as I need to take them myself and then go, okay, now I need help. And then the whole subject, so I haven't sat my exams in a normal exam period for the past 2 years. Mm. I've been overseas during the exam period, so I come back and they say, okay, so when does it suit you to sit this exam? So I had a genetics exam after my Olympic qualifier, and I hadn't studied for genetics after. I was living in the glory moment. But I could barely
genetics,
keep...
Genetics, what the heck's that?
Yeah, I could barely keep up with which country I was in from day to day. But when I came back, then I had a couple of weeks to study for the exams, then they gave me a date appropriate that I was well equipped for, and then I was overseas for the next 9 weeks, and a subject said, yeah, no, I'll support you. And so just having the whole university on board has just made it that much easier. I can go to university not stressing, oh, am I going to pass this? Which with biochemistry, that's a very legitimate thing, am I going to pass this? But to have the unit coordinators, the sports facility, the Elite Athlete Program, everyone's on board to say, yep, we support what you're doing, and if you need anything, you just contact us. So it's been awesome.
For Nicola McDermott, what do you do away from athletics? What do you like to do in your very limited spare time, leisure time? You know, what do you like to get into?
Yeah, so I think I've been... I've had to change it. So it used to be piano. I loved that. But you don't have a piano on the road, you know. If I did in the hotel, I'd have to have some good Chopin, and my fingers aren't made for that anymore. Okay. But, I enjoy reading. I enjoy... enjoy journaling. I've got a journal, so I always love writing things down.
A diary, yes.
Yeah, not like, dear diary today, but like certain things that you learn on the way. things that are close to your heart. I'm like, I love riding, so that's one thing that you can just take on board with you, catching up with friends and things. And my faith is a big part of my life, so every time I'm in a different country, there's always somebody there that will have a chat to me and just be gnawing out the not just the athletic side of it, but you know how my beliefs are, and just challenging me and pushing me that way. So that takes up a big time. So I go to the church here on the Central Coast and involved in youth groups and things.
Good.
School talks. I do a lot of school talks everything. Yeah. Mm.
Well, it's great, Nicola, because you're still a young 22 and you're passing that on to the youth. Not only what it takes to achieve, but that pathway along the way. Tell us 2018 Commonwealth Games in Brisbane.
Yeah.
Talk us through that experience and you pick up the bronze medal.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was also a turning point. I genuinely think my brain changed during that. something birthed in me after that. I was selected for it and I knew that it was a big thing. So I'd come last at the 2017 World Championships. So there was a lot of people saying, will she get selected again for the Commonwealth Games? I was ranked number one in Australia, but there was just a bit of... I wasn't too sure if I was really going to get selected. So we were there for about a month. I was on the last day of competition. My parents were in the stadium and it was Super Saturday. So I've had a chat to so many people and they went, you know, I was just at the local RSL and then you were on the TV, or I turned on the TV in my living room and there you were, or people were on the Gold Coast and they were just sunbaking and they looked up and there's Nicola doing a clap. So I was really in the zone, just went, you know what? After 2017, that mindset of like, I just don't want to be here to make up a number. I want to really achieve those dreams in my heart. So I was going for the gold and I was set out, and I knew that if I'd did a personal best that day, my PB was 190 at that stage, that something magical could happen. So I was so focused. I just went to tunnel vision. I barely remember it. The crowds are screaming around me because we had the relay going on while I was doing high jumps. So I think they dropped the bat and all the whole crowd of 35,000 are screaming their heads off. I couldn't hear a single thing. All I could see was the high jump bar.
Yeah.
And so that was that clarity. And my main thing was, don't get too emotional. You know, if you clear a bar, just walk off. Anyway, the 1m91 happens and there's four of us left in the competition. So it was a new personal best. I was the first one to jump out of the order and I did a big clap and I jumped it, and then when I saw that the bar stayed on, because I just ticked it a bit but it stayed on, I went ballistic. And I was like, Nicola, that was not a part of the plan, but the whole stadium's going. And Tasman Lewis, she was the commentator, she's just like, she's in the gold medal position, and the stadium's going crazy and
I'm getting goosey.
I've got a photo here, I've got a video here of it, and it was one of those things where I went, oh, I've done it, but I was still so in the zone that I was like, next height. It wasn't, oh, now I'm going to celebrate and pick up my flag. I was still in, like, there's four people left. Anyway, I missed the 1m93, but found out that I had the bronze medal, and then I had to sit down patiently with all the excitement of what for the competition to finish, and got my flag, and so I was running around the track and just having people in my life that I'd seen that got so excited for me, and I was able to hug them and have my medal ceremony. And yeah, it was just one of those experiences where I realised that I'm probably not going to have a home games in my lifetime again, unless I was jumping till I was 40 or something. But for that moment, it will always be one of my all-time favourites.
What was it like being in the dressing room with all the other competitors getting ready for that event, you know, the final, and you said there's four. What were you like in the dressing sheds getting ready? You're about to go out into the stadium, 35,000 people.
Yeah.
What was going through your mind?
Well, to be honest, the high jumpers were actually a great group of girls that were all good friends. Of course, we're focused and you have to sort of just prepare your mind, but you're not looking at anybody in like the core room and going, you know, I'm going to beat you, or you're looking at them just going, you ready? It's like, yeah, I think so. It's like, yeah, good luck. And you go out there and you're focused, but I think behind closed doors, especially for high jumpers, well, from my experience, it's just your group of girls and you all want them to be doing well, because there's no glory in winning the Commonwealth Games with 1 metre 80. You know, there's no glory in that. But if you've fought to the end and then you've jumped like 2 metres or something, you go away and the other girls actually have to take you there. Mm-hmm. You can't just jump that high with no competition. They're not going to push you. So it's just, we have this really beautiful friendship, which is just really nice. Even if we're really focused, we know that, okay, it's just them to try and get over the high jump bar. But if you look at us talking afterwards, people are hugging you and going, that was a PB, and they're really exciting. So, but yeah, to get into the zone, sometimes just need to be a bit quiet and you look serious, but everyone's friends for high jump.
So, Nicola, if 2018 was very good, 2019's been great.
Yeah.
You know, what you've achieved. Tell us about the Europe, you know, being successful over there and raising that PB to 196.
Yeah. So 5 centimetres. I've never had a 5 centimetre improvement in anything. We changed a lot of my technique, made some big changes, increased our team. So rather than just my coach, Matt Horsnell, in charge of everything, we started outsourcing, you know, saying, you're allowed to do this, and letting sports professionals work with me. Which is just his character. I think he's really understanding and willing to offload when people can be a bit overbearing. You know, that people just want to take control, but he's not like that. So yeah, really honoured by my coach. But so I went overseas and I just had this great desire to jump 196 because you're into the Olympics, but if also then you get into the Diamonds League circuit. So I went over to Europe. I got told by a lot of people that that's not the right decision to do because the Oceanas was in Townsville at the same time, and that's a very big ranking point system to try and that you can sort of sneak into the Olympics. If you're not going to jump the automatic qualifier, you can sneak in other ways. You need to have good ranking points, and that's one of the ways. And so a lot of people said, just stay in Australia. Like, why risk missing out on this huge competition where you can get into the Olympics? You're throwing your Olympic dream away. And I'm like, no, I'm going to jump that 96. Mm. So I said, I'm going overseas. Thank you, but I've got a bit more faith in this. So, I went overseas with my coach and we packed up everything. And my manager, he's really good. He got me into a few good competitions. And I went over there. My first jump was 191 overseas. And I thought, great, you know, that's a good start. And then the next jump was 1 metre 80. And I was like, oh, no, I've thrown everything away. And I was jet lagged. And, and my manager was a bit like, what's going on here? You know, you've just thrown away Townsville, like the Oceanas. You're going to throw away your Olympic dream. But my coach and I, we reconvened, needed to change the technique. I think the best thing we did was on the spot, we went, okay, this needs to change. Let's do it. We don't think twice. If something needs to be done, we just go ahead, fail quickly, move on. Let's get into the next stage. So then the next competition I got in was 1 metre 92. And I got a call from my manager, old Chappie, going, okay, I'm in Czech Republic right now. They've got a huge competition. This is in 2 days' time. Are you willing to do it? They'd have to fly me from Sweden to Czech Republic. Originally, I was going to go to Sweden, have about 7 days off, then go to Germany, you know, all really nice gap between competition.
Sure.
To have a 1 day gap in between a whole competition, that's you may as well just be run over by the garbage truck, you know. It's really hard. Anyway, we got there. My coach wasn't able to make it because it was so short notice, but my manager managed to get me over there. So I was jumping by myself with the best girls in the world, and I rocked up and I felt terrible, I have to say. It was a big travel day, tired and sore, but I went, well, in the Olympics with the final, that's 2 days after the qualification. Are you going to say you're a bit sore? You know, I don't feel like doing it. Or are you going to get out there and give it your all?
Give it a go, yeah.
And so, again, I went into this tunnel vision of just doing it automatically. And the 196 happened that day. 198 was really close. And that just opened up the rest of the Europe and the rest of the year that I'd qualified for the Olympics, got in the top 10 in the world as far as ranking-wise at that stage. And yeah, it just opened up all of the doors. So that was a great moment, for probably my favourite moment in my jumping career.
And you're probably wanting to celebrate, but there was no one else around you to celebrate with.
Yeah.
You know, you're on your own there.
I had a Magnum and I had an ice bath, and then I had a cry on the phone with all my coach and my family and stuff. I think the hardest thing for me was then I had World Championships in October, and that happened in June. But you can't get higher than what just, you know, you can get higher, but that moment was just so big for me. I'd surpassed my goals halfway through my trip. So then I gradually had to learn how to continue on when you'd reached a goal to keep on raising the bar. And I think that's a skill that not many people have to learn, but I've managed to keep that, and I learnt on the go, which, I'm really thankful for.
Well, Nicola, that deserved recognition and rewards is coming your way, winning a lot of individual awards, as Rick mentioned, being honoured here on the Central Coast, as well as the University Sports Person of the Year. We can just tell from your attitude and your focus that you're ready to achieve more. 2020 is a big year.
Yeah.
How are you preparing for it at this stage, knowing that the highlight will be Japan, the Olympics?
Yeah, so I think, we were having a chat beforehand, you have to be really transparent in your life. So I've let every single person know, look, I'm not doing things for the Olympics. I'm not going to be jumping as frequently as I did this year because I need to save myself up. It's being really picky. If I need to do a training session at this time of the day, beforehand I just was this whatever attitude, just get it done and it's done. But doing the work properly takes your whole effort. So that's my full-time job at the moment, is being an athlete, doing everything 100%, not just 95%, because that's what gets you to that next level. So we're doing a strength block at the moment. I'll start jumping next year around January, February. I've got the World Indoor Championships in China in March. I'll head overseas again to Europe in May, June, come back home and then go to the Olympics. I think the important thing is those girls that are jumping over 2 meters, I need to be around them, because otherwise you might get a big head. they humble you right down. But also, if you put yourself into a position where girls are jumping higher than you, the big heights don't seem as daunting because everyone else is jumping it.
Yep.
And you want to be surrounding yourself around the best. So the important thing is me just staying healthy, staying fit, doing a huge strength block now, and then chasing these competitions that are going to help me reach that goal and bump up my personal best again.
I guess, next year when you're starting to head towards the Olympics, fitness, staying fit, not getting injured.
Yeah.
That's going to be a massive thing that you're going to have to keep an eye on.
Yeah.
What would likely be an injury for you in the lead up to the Olympics? What would
so,
be?
I've had a clean slate with injury history, which is just a blessing. But I think it's with high jump, the biggest injuries have to do with the takeoff foot. So
yep.
The right foot could be with overuse injury with the bones, the ankles, the knees. It's everything with your technique. If it's not 100%, the room for injury is huge.
Mm-hmm.
So that's usually with high jumpers, with Achilles, like the tendons and things, everything delicate. That's a big injury that takes out a lot of high jumpers. Yeah.
Well, Nicola, you get the impression that discipline, belief and focus are so important for yourself. Being disciplined to stretch every night to make sure these injuries are prevented.
Yeah.
Be disciplined to go through the same warm-up routine to make sure that these injuries don't happen. But having that belief that I'm not satisfied with 1.96 and I'm not satisfied with 2 metres, I think that's important.
Yeah.
And being focused at the right time in that competition that is the important one.
Yeah.
And those things all have to come together at the same time, and we can see you'll deserve the success that you'll achieve.
Oh, thanks for that. I think the hard balance is not focusing too much about it. So a lot of the Olympians before me have said to me, now don't just start changing everything because it's the Olympics year. That's how when you're too focused on doing a bit more, just a bit too much. It's having a balance of saying, I really care about this, but I also care about it enough to not think about it all the time. Not going to suffocate this dream of just saying, I'm stretching and I'm doing everything, but also keeping my mind fixed on other things as well. So I'm just not stressed. So that's where uni comes in. It's really good.
Did you ever have a hero growing up, into your teenage years, athletics, your high jumping, not necessarily high jumps? Did you have a sports person that you admired?
Yeah. So I loved Blanka Vlasic. She was a Croatian high jumper, 208. Since I'm half Croatian, all of a sudden I'm like, cousin. Yes.
We're related.
Well, somewhere down there. I loved what she brought to the sport. She brought so much joy.
Yeah.
If you ever watched her, you just have a smile on your face and you didn't realize why. So I've really admired her. She was so professional. She was the best in the sport, but she was also willing to get the crowd involved and to make it an experience, not just a spectator sport. Everyone got involved. And, yeah, I think she's probably one of my high jump heroes.
Mm. Nicola, it's important to stay grounded as well. What's it like when you're walking the front door at home? You know, do they just treat you like it? They don't say, Nicola, have you made sure you've drank this amount of water today? And being around your friends as well.
Yeah, so high jump's always been my thing. So it's been nice as far as my parents. They've just gone, well, that's if you want to do it, you're just focused on you. They haven't gone, you know, what are you eating or what are you doing for training and stuff? It was none of your business, you know. But but they treat me like a daughter.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
They love me like a daughter. I get no special treatment. They just, they're interested in my well-being. And, you know, mums being mums and dads being dads, they're just focused on making sure that you have a life. And they remind you quite often of life apart from sport. But my friends, they're incredible. They always ground me. And I think they always offer support. Even if they're not elite high jumpers, one of my best friends, Nara Nang, she's the Australian champion for 100 metre and long jump. And so she's one of my heroes, even though we're best friends. And so we talk really frequently about everything, because we pretty much go through the exact same stuff at the exact same time. So I have someone just to always bounce ideas off, and if I'm feeling upset about something, she gets it completely. So to have a best friend like that is just I'm so blessed by her.
Do you have a favorite place that you've jumped at? Is there a favorite sporting stadium where you've competed around the world? What's been one that you I love this place?
I do love the Czech Republic, where I did my personal best, simply because we had a stadium, maybe 40,000, 50,000 that day, and everyone does the clap. Like, everyone gets involved, and little kids come out with their autograph cards, and it's the people, they have music pumping, but everyone has such a respect for the athletes. And the track, the stadium's good, but I think it's that the spectators aren't just there judging or saying, oh, you know, this person jumped better or this person looks better when they're jumping. They're just interested in you. So I've got a big heart for Czech Republic now after I've been there. So, yeah, that's probably my favourite place.
Good, good.
Nicola, let's look forward to the future. The Olympics, your event will be the last day of the Olympics. We're trying to help here, prepare you. How are you going to be throughout the course of the entire Olympics, knowing that I can't go and watch the swimming or I can't go and watch this? How are you going to prepare for that one moment?
Yeah, so at the Commonwealth Games, it was good because I was on the last day also. Mm-hmm. And I did get tickets to the swimming final about 4 or 5 days before the before my final. And then I thought, it's going to be a late night. No, I don't think I want to do that. So I think it's going to be okay. I'm not too... my focus is pretty spot on. I'm know that I'm not going to be able to go see the basketball, the gymnastics and the diving, even though all my friends will be there. I'll be watching on TV just like you guys. maybe a bit more coverage than normal. But I know that I've got my entire life to be able to watch Olympics and games and things. The important thing is that it doesn't ruin my preparation for the event, because that's one thing that I would live in regret for more than if I missed out on a final. Yeah.
When you get there, how long before the games start do you and all the Australian athletes get there to get ready, get into the vibe of the village, get a feel for the place, the weather, temperatures, etc.? When do you get there?
So the hard thing is no one's really had a sit-down conversation with the Australian team. So the Australian Nationals are in March. After that, the team gets selected officially, and then we get all this information. conversations are at the moment, since we're in the last few days of competition, we're not going to be there for, we're not going to be put into the Olympics until a lot later.
Okay.
Because they don't want, I think they've got a certain amount of quota. So athletes that are at the start of the program, they leave. They're not allowed to stay around. Mm-hmm. And people that are later on, they're not allowed to leave to get there early. So I probably would only be there, probably the second wave of athletes towards the end. I want to make sure that I'm in Japan at least 10 days before my competition,
sure.
just to acclimatise. But we might have a holding camp in Japan just outside the Olympic Village, because people say it does get intense in there because everyone's living on top of each other.
Yeah, sure.
But I've had a lot of experience now with athlete villages and things from previous competitions, so I think I'll be okay. Mm.
Nicola, we go back the other way. What's it like now walking into Gosford Little Athletics or to Mingara Athletics? You know, the adulation that you'd receive. How does that make you feel?
Yeah, it's great. Most people don't know. I was talking to a young girl at Gosford Little Athletics and she said, "Are you doing Zone Little Athletics Carnival?" And I was like, "Honey, I'm like 10 years older than you. You can imagine me like doing like some bounding."
Yes,
like,
I'm going to compete against a 13-year-old.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they looked at me and went, "Oh, she's not jumping against me, is she?" I'm like, "No, I jump a metre higher than you." Like, yeah. But no, it's good because my profile is big enough that the people that are always around, they are just so supportive. I love being on the coast and training on the coast because it keeps you realizing that you have come a long way. Mm. And so every time I go back in there, there's that reminisce of, I remember.
This is how I started.
Yeah. Or you might see that one lanky small kid and you went, "Oh, that was me." So I think it's a really beautiful thing to be on the coast and to have that, because when you're just in the institutes, it's always of what you're not. So it's always about, or when you're overseas, you're not the Olympic champion yet. Meanwhile, you come back to the coast, you're like, you qualified for the Olympics. Like they make it real, and I like it. I really like it.
Aside from a podium finish at Tokyo, what are the other ambitions for Nicola McDermott? Have you got any other bucket list things that you want to achieve?
I think as far as a high jumper, my goal is, like, with that 2 meter thing, is that a consistent 2 meter jumper, which means your PB is around 205, 206. I'm young in the sport, so a lot of the girls, you peak when you're around 30, so I'm 22. Mm-hmm. So I've got another 10 years left. So after having a chat to one of the girls who won the gold medal at the Commonwealth Games, Laverne Spencer, she's 35 years old, right? So she was 35, 36. So she's been in the sport for a long time. She said, "Nicola, you're not allowed to retire before 2028 Olympics." I'm like, "Oh." So that's 4-3 Olympics. And I think one of my ambitions for the sport is to be someone that is like the best in the sport, but consistently jumping those heights that on cue I could jump 2 meters for you and be like, "Oh, that's pretty cool." But also to be in the sport where I can positively impact it and mentor the other younger athletes that'll come through after me. That'll be something that I'd love to do.
Mm. Nicola, the Central Coast is proud of you. Know that when you're in Japan and you start getting the clap going, there'll be thousands of people on the Central Coast will be doing that and supporting you all the way. And we wish you all the best on, not only, you know, we hope you win a medal, you know, that'd be fantastic, but getting to that stage and representing, you know, Australia makes us on the Central Coast very proud of you.
Yeah, and to hear that national anthem, you know, when you've got the medal around your neck, whatever colour it may be, that'd be a magic moment. The greatest thing that's happened to you, I think, in sport, wouldn't it?
Yeah, definitely. There's never had an... we've never had a World Championships medal for female high jump in the history. I think the last Olympic medal we had for high jump was 1952. So I think that is a... That's a stage.
You're a trailblazer.
I think we need to have a redemption for women's high jump in Australia.
But Nicola, it means so much, you know, that medal, it identifies with all the sacrifices, not only yourself but your family and your friends and all those 1% people that you've mentioned along the way, getting stronger, you know, the people helping you identify with that, it all adds up to that. So I know, we're just talking to you this small period of time, that you're very conscious and appreciate what all those people have done.
Yeah, definitely. You couldn't have gotten here by yourself. If I was by myself, maybe 170, 160. that would have been the maximum that I could do. But yeah, I'm a byproduct of the community and the amount of effort and faith and love people have invested into me. So I'm carrying them with me when I'm at that
height. I'm sure they're going to enjoy the ride and the height that you're going to jump. It's been a pleasure to have you as part of our sports podcast. All the very best in Japan next year. This could go well. People will be listening to it in 2020 perhaps. So fantastic what you've done so far, and a lot more to come, I'm sure.
Thanks for that.
Thanks, Nicola. It's been an absolute pleasure.